I have not mastered the art of letting go, but I am practicing it. When I create, I don't have that issue because I've trained myself to be the first person in my audience. I don't think, what does someone else want to hear? I think, what do I want to explore? When I release it, part of releasing something and marketing it and branding it is thinking, how can I get this to the most people so it can have the biggest impact? And honestly, also hopefully allow me to continue to live a life of freedom and abundance. So it's almost like you have to wear two hats after you've completed something. But when I'm creating something, I try not to think about anybody else, because I trust that, like, if I explore that thing that sparks me, I will wind up in a place that will resonate with others.
Hey everybody, what's up? It's Chase. That little nugget of wisdom was from my dear friend Adam. He goes by the name InQ. That is his, artist name, IN-Q. And he's an award-winning artist in many respects. He's an Emmy-nominated poet. He's a multi-platinum songwriter, an amazing and world-renowned keynote speaker, best-selling author of a book called Inquire Within, which is part of his artist namesake. He's been a guest on the show before, debuting that book. And it was during the pandemic when he performed some amazing spoken word poetry live in front of thousands of people on the show. Other achievements include being named Oprah's Super Soul 100 list of the world's most influential thought leaders, being the first spoken word artist to perform with Cirque du Soleil, been featured on all sorts of television, HBO's Def Jam Poetry. He has an amazing stand-up poetry special that streams on Amazon Prime called InQ Live at the Ace Theater in Los Angeles. And one of my favorite things about Adam is he's my friend. In addition to being all of those amazing things and my friend, he delivers a masterclass today in creativity, in a mechanism for being authentic, for trusting our artistic integrity, our guts about what to put out in the world, that we have to move forward. And we talk about a few things he's got. He's just releasing a new spoken word album and a journal, both of which are incredibly powerful. I got early access to this, and he's timing all this to coincide with Mental Health Awareness Month. In this album and in the show today, he's incredibly vulnerable, and we have a lot to learn from him. I can't wait for you to enjoy today's show. It's a real powerful creative force of nature, as is Adam. It's a perfect marriage here, perfect union. I can't wait. Enjoy the show. Yours truly, and InQ. My man, welcome back to the show. We did it. Thank you so much for being a guest.
Thank you for having me, Chase.
We've had this conversation before on a different piece of work. It was one of the most profound shows. It was during the pandemic. You performed something live in front of thousands that were turned in real time. And I understand you've got something prepared again today.
I do. This is one of the pieces from the album and the journal. And I thought it would be a good way to start us on our conversation today. It's called Growth.
Thank you.
They say a goldfish will only get as big as its bowl. But if you put it in a tank, the space can change the way it grows. It needs to have the room, or its potential doesn't show. So its environment's essential for unleashing the unknown. I ponder if it knows that it could grow beyond the bowl, that it could have a pond the size of an Olympic swimming pool, that the world is so much larger than the boundaries that it's known. Somehow I empathize with this little golden soul. because I too have unexplored and unexpressed goals that were suppressed by an environment I couldn't control. Am I still playing small because it's all that I've known? When there's a giant in my bones I'm not sure I've ever shown, I ask myself this question when I'm purposely alone. When my body grows to take up all the rooms inside my home, I expand in all directions, every single inch consumed. I'm a billion feet tall now, my head over the moon. I look down on the earth as it slowly spins around. I look down on the countries and the cities and the towns. I look down on the square blocks and buildings all around. I look down on my street and rip the roof right off my house. I look down on myself sitting writing on my couch. Look, I barely pay attention. I'm the one that's looking down. How unaware I am of where I am. It's profound. So I put the roof back on and I shrink myself back to the ground. Man, it's crazy how I fit infinity inside my doubt. How I stuff the universe into the tiniest amounts. How I keep the solar system in the corner of my mouth. How I speak into existence, then forget what I'm about. And most days, I'm not sure which side of the glass I've been on. I win a Grammy in the shower every time I sing a song. But when the spotlight is on, my first instinct's to run. I have to super glue my feet to even tell you where I'm from. I've been training for a quarantine since I was very young. For an introvert, it slightly hurts to tell you that they'll come. I would rather get into a staring contest with the sun, although I'll never get to see who won. It's nature and it's nurture, twisting into jungle life, fighting the competition, branching out to reach the light. I tried to listen, but could only hear my ancient heart. It screamed at me to make my life into my greatest art. But where to start? These walls are keeping people out and keeping people in. I guess it's good to know where someone ends and someone else begins. But our boundaries become prisons when we see what could have been. The biggest goldfish ever measured 18 inches snout to fin. Finn.
For those who are listening to that and not watching, my eyes were closed for most of that. And on two different occasions, maybe three different occasions, I was aware that you were performing that for us in the moment and that we were not listening to an album. And it made me teary. I want to say thank you. That was absolutely spectacular. All right. You got to shake myself out of that. I'm first of all, welcome back. Deeply personal album and journal. How did you choose these two things? The last time we were talking, it was about a book, and that has traveled far and wide. And as I hinted earlier, it was a different time. Why an album? Why a different package than your last, you know, major artistic output?
Well, Inquire Within was an amalgamation of all of the poems that I had written over that period of time in my life up until the moment when I started compiling them together for the book. And it was the internal journey and the external journey. And that if you go on the internal journey, it cycles back around to the external journey. And for this album that I made, it was almost like accidental. I wouldn't have like set out to make a spoken word album with a classical piano and strings. I'm not sure there is much of a market for that yet. So I think we're creating it in real time. But I got an email from this incredible artist, classical pianist from Italy, and her name is Isabella Torso. And she wanted to compose to some of my poetry. And I said yes, and sent her a few pieces. And she sent me back this really beautiful music that accompanied my words in a unique way and brought out the emotion. But to be completely honest, I was still unsure how I would package that, or if I wanted to, you know, put it into an album or even release it at all. And then my wife and I were having a really deep conversation about a medicine journey that I had taken that brought me a lot of presence and clarity. And she decided to record the conversation. And it was one of these really intimate moments that only life partners have, or best friends have, people that truly unconditionally love each other. And a few days later, she sent me the recording, and I realized that that could be the conceptual through line of this record. And then we ultimately decided to make the Never Ending Now Poetry Journal to give other people the same creative outlet for exploring their own mental and emotional health through poetry.
Beautifully chosen packages for the work. And I mean, obviously the album is the main thrust, but I was very intrigued. I was going to say impressed, but that doesn't quite sort of, because impresses, it seems like an out there thing. This is more of an in there thing. Like, I felt a little burst of courage with the poetry journal after listening to the album, where I think if I'd just received a journal, I wouldn't have felt the inspiration or the courage. So I see what you did there. I felt it rather. I don't know if I see it, I feel it. And we'll get to the journal in just a second. And I'd like to keep pulling on this thread, because what you said at the end there is sort of the explore this inner, the mental part. And you've timed the release of this album, not at all coincidentally, very intentionally, with Mental Health Awareness Month here in the month of May. We are recording this in advance, to be fully transparent. We're recording this in March. And yet it's not, you know, it's very clear that you are submitting this to the world in connection with that. Can you explain it? Why and what was the process behind that?
Yeah, well, like most of my art, it starts in a place of curiosity, enthusiasm, annoyance, and passion before it gets to purpose or product. So for me, this was an opportunity to explore my own mental and emotional health. Poetry has always been an outlet for the unresolved stories in my life. And once I've gotten them onto the page, they have tended to have less power over me. Mm. And I have felt more free. So it's been an avenue for clarity, as well as creativity. And ultimately, I have let go of many things through my poetry. I have found power through my poetry, and I have manifested many things through my poetry. But I didn't know how to give that to other people without my having to be there. Mm. Because when I show up and facilitate the poetry workshops, whether it's companies, corporations, communities, libraries, after school programs, it's always about people finding themselves through a genre of creativity that they might not ever normally use. and exploring something moving and meaningful to them, and then sharing it with others so that they can see and be seen. And so I always like to lead by example. And this album is an opportunity for me to lead by example, to let people into the vulnerable parts of my story that I'm usually only comfortable sharing after I put them into a poem that is great.
Polished.
You know? Right. Yeah, because then in some way it's almost like I'm telling vulnerability rather than showing vulnerability. And this album is really raw. It's really authentic. And because of that, it's an invitation into my heart, but it's also an invitation for the audience into their own.
Adam, I'm wondering if you can orient us so the album opens essentially with a conversation. What are we listening to in that conversation?
Well, after this therapeutic medicine journey that I took, which was a combination of, you know, psilocybin and DMT and Molly, and I'd been working with a therapist for like 6 months, so it was very like contained in being uncontained. What came to me more than anything else was these frozen ages in my life, that there were these time periods where traumatic things had happened to me that they were almost like versions of myself that were trapped inside of me that felt unexpressed and unheard. And I wanted to talk to my wife about that. And so we were kind of in this like deep conversation about those frozen ages and how when I'm triggered in reality, sometimes I catch amnesia to my life and I go back to those frozen ages and act out in ways that I'm not proud of. And it's really because those parts of me don't get enough acknowledgement and attention. So it had this like deep foundation. And because I was talking with my favorite person in the world and the person that I'm closest to, I didn't have that disguise of invincibility that I sometimes have when I'm on stage, which really just probably hides my vulnerability and insecurity and humanity. So this kind of pulled back the veil on all of that. And the poems are about dreams, and they're about growth, and they're about acceptance, and they're about fear and sadness and love. It's really the journey to love.
The I marvel at the way in to work. Like the artist has to choose a way in, right? And in that case, starting it with, you know, it's so orienting to be having this conversation, because the context is ambiguous, and yet is it Joyce? It says, in the particular lies the universal. This conversation that you're having, it is so simple. And wait, I forgot what we're talking about. Or, you know, there's like, it's just so authentic and so raw. And then, you know, to kick off with the album is, how much a part of that did you choose ahead of time that this was going to be, that this conversation could be the way into that material? I'm always fascinated. I've been working on a book and I'm like the blank page. I know what I want to say, but what are the first 10 things, the first 10 words that come out of my mouth? It's always very, very difficult for me. It's like, I suppose it's like the first couple bars of music, or in your case, the first couple of words. And yet you chose, you made a very interesting artistic and powerful artistic choice. Was that by design or was that afterthought?
No. So we had made these three songs slash poems. And I literally was just unclear what to do with them. Like, I personally liked them a lot. And I was like, these are really powerful works of unique art. But I didn't know where to put them. And so I just kind of put them down for a few months. And then after Andreana sent me the recording of our conversation, I thought, you know, maybe that could be the conceptual through line to creating a larger album. But even that felt far away to me, Chase. I wasn't clear that I wanted to pursue this breadcrumb trail. And then what happened is one of the three demos that we had made at the time got to Andrea Bocelli's producer, and he loved it. I assume it's one of his producers. Anyway, I won't go into the specifics, because as I'll explain the story, I don't want to like name any names. But anyway, he loved it, and he invited us to perform with Bocelli at the Hollywood Bowl. And so Isabella and her partner flew out from Italy, and I was extremely busy. I mean, I did like 70 shows and workshops last year all around the country and the world. And this was the previous year, and I had done a similar amount. So I was like, there was a lot going on, but I had prepared to do.
Just gotta wedge in the Hollywood Bowl, right?
Well, I don't mean to sound arrogant or anything like that, because I was so excited to do it.
Yeah.
But it was one of a lot of other things that I was preparing for creatively, or I had responsibilities for business-wise, and there was a lot of travel in between. So I literally flew back the day before the performance, and unfortunately, they ended up changing the schedule at the Hollywood Bowl, and they decided that they didn't have the slot for us that they had originally offered. And it wasn't my connection in the first place. I had met with the producer. I liked him a lot. But Isabella was really disappointed. They had flown out from Italy. Clearly, you know, it was. And so we ended up just going into the studio. And honestly, I don't think the album would have been made had we not gotten kicked off the Hollywood Bowl schedule. So I'm actually very, very grateful, because we had this free day. And so we went into the studio, and literally she sat in front of the piano, and I started doing some other poems, and we sketched the rest of the album out in about 4 hours. And then they returned home, and I recorded the rest of it, I think, in the next couple of weeks. And then even when I finished it, I wasn't sure I wanted to put it out.
What?
It had been such an incredible healing journey for me to create it, mm-hmm. that I didn't know if I wanted it to be judged or validated by anyone else. It was enough on its own. And so I decided I would ask a few people. And my metric to making the decision to put it out was, if one of these five people that I send it to not only tells me that they appreciate it, but tells me that it was meaningful to them, you know, that it moved something inside of them and allowed them to look through the window of my life into their own, then it would be worth it. And that was pretty much what all five people said. So
I was going to say, I mean, you know, see earlier comment I said about in the particular lies the universal, right? Your vulnerability, your authenticity, it oozes, you know, out of that album. Highly recommend it, just for anyone listening right now. Headphones,
like
man, it is I don't know. There's an extra dimension. Of course, it's fine without them, but extra special with them. All right, let's zoom out just a little bit. Where does this project sit in terms of your, as you just said, you were judging you're making the determination whether to release it out of meaning and connection rather than commercial success. You made a joke earlier about, I don't know if this is a thing. I mean, spoken word with, you know, with classical piano, like, is this a thing? And yet it always seemed, we were sort of joking before we started recording how, you know, you never know where your art's going to go. You never know the impact and the power it's going to have. And the things that you are, you know, fiddling with in your free time, they maybe become the next big thing. And at the risk of, you know, my goal is not to get you to predict how this will be received, but it's more about trusting your intuition and ignoring the trappings of commercial success. Like, how important was that? And I'm asking because the people who are listening to us right now are creative or creative curious. There are things inside of them that they are debating whether or not to put out. And there's an intuitive voice that they are either choosing to listen to or choosing to ignore, regardless of the outcome, regardless of it saying put it out or don't put it out or whatever. I'm wondering if you can help us, you know, basically deconstruct that, how we ought to listen. What role was your intuition in this process? And did you listen to it or did you ignore it?
I always listen to my intuition in creating things. I've always had a very deep connection to that internal voice, you know? But in terms of like packaging things, marketing things, releasing things, it's always been a mystery to me. You know, I don't know how to present my art. I know how to be my art. Mm. And when you put something out into the world, you need to attach a story to it. You know, I think the biggest problem that I will have in promoting this thing is getting people to take the time to listen to it fully. Mm. Because as you said, if they put on headphones and they look at the album as almost like an audio movie, it takes you through a real beginning, middle, and an end, and hopefully leaves you in a place of infinite possibility. I would say to anybody who's listening to this, who's considering creating or releasing something that is moving and meaningful to you, that almost always, if it is moving and meaningful to you and it was created from an authentic place, it will be moving and meaningful to other people. And you have to be willing to give it away without expectation. And you have to balance that with your dreams and goals. And it's a razor's edge that we as artists who are living in a world of commerce have to continue to walk. But art is alchemy. It is an opportunity to transform energy. Emotion is energy in motion. It has to move. And there's many ways that you can move energy, but one of them is through creativity. And so when you are willing to alchemize your life into something creative and you release it without expectation, you don't confine how people receive it. And if you don't confine how people receive it, it can be surprising even to you. You know, sometimes somebody will come up to me after hearing a performance and they'll say, that one line that you said, and they'll repeat this line back to me. It really struck me and it made me consider my own life and it moved me. And it's something that I'm going to think about in the future. And they said a line that was not the line that I said. Literally, it wasn't It wasn't the line and it wasn't the meaning of the line for me. But I never correct them because I don't want to confine their interpretation of my art. Who am I to do that?
It's very, there's an intelligence baked into that that I feel like has something to do with letting go. And, you know, the irony of most of the really creative people that I know, there is a tug of war with those things, with like allowing the art to be what it is. And in many ways, you had to control enough factors in the process of making a thing in order to put it out there, right? You had to decide what studio you were going to record at. You had to decide with whom, when, what topic. There's 100, maybe 1,000 variables that as a creator, you are controlling in this process to decide what's going on and what's not. And there seems to me to be some magic, especially in what you just said, that, and yet when you hit go or publish or send or, you know, whatever the button that you're pushing, to be able to turn that off is extraordinary. Is this difficult for you, or is this your natural state? I'm asking for someone who might be curious, maybe. Asking for myself. Fine. I'm asking for me.
Very difficult. So definitely don't look to me as a source of, I don't know, like I have not mastered the art of letting go.
Okay.
But I am practicing it. When I create, I don't have that issue because I've trained myself to be the first person in my audience. Like, I don't think, what does someone else want to hear? I think, what do I want to explore? When I release it, part of releasing something and marketing it and branding it is thinking, how can I get this to the most people so it can have the biggest impact? And honestly, also hopefully allow me to continue to live a life of freedom and abundance. So it's almost like you have to wear two hats after you've like completed something. But when I'm creating something, I try not to think about anybody else because I trust that like if I explore that thing that sparks me, I will wind up in a place that will resonate with others.
It's so true and so fucking hard.
How do you do it? What is your creative process and how do you deal with balancing those two dichotomies?
Absolutely true confession here. It is in media that I am comfortable in. It has become natural. I have trained the muscle enough to just the confidence muscle, maybe. And in media that I am exploring, like, you know, I've done a few books. I'm currently writing my second one, a follow-up. I've got a lot of pressure, a sophomore follow-up to a very successful book. And I am not, that is not my primary medium, words. I'm a picture dude, visual. And in photography or visual art, very easy for me to trust my instinct, turn off that voice, just create, because it is, there's a one-to-one connection. It's almost a mirror of what I think and then what I'm able to create, give me enough time or budget or energy or whatever, and I can make the thing. With words, as just one example, there is a gap, and that gap is very painful for me. The what I want to get out and what I want to say and how I want to say it. So there's an opportunity, because there's a gap, there's an opportunity for a lot of interference. And I'm constantly mediating. Is this good? Or is this is not quite it. You know, there's just way too much sort of space for conversation. I think this is the argument to practice, right? Because it's the practicing, it's the building of the muscle. And so me, it's medium specific and I'm aware that I'm much better at some than others. And the hardest part of this, Adam, is that I am aware enough of the creative process and having been really good at some aspects of it, I know that I just have to keep playing at the ones that I'm not good enough at.
Yeah.
I just have to keep showing up, and fuck, that is hard.
Yeah, because it's unsolvable. It's unfixable other than your presence.
Yeah.
And your willingness to continue to walk through the valleys so that you can reach the next peak.
There are no shortcuts. There literally are none. It's just putting one foot in front of the other. And that's, again, having experienced it in one, you know, capacity, and you knew what it took to get. This is one of the reasons I like mastery. Like, I can say that I have mastered, say, photography. The image that I have in my mind and what I can put out there, there is a basically the creative gap, to use Ira Glass. The gap is almost zero. And I'm aware exponent because I have done that. I am now intimately aware of that there is a gap in these other media, and that the only way, you know, through is, what is it? The only way out is through. Really hard, especially for a person who likes to control stuff.
I mean, I don't want to sound like a guy with a long white beard, and you know, I don't want to pretend. Please. I don't want to pretend like I have this like completed and sewed up in my own life. But one observation I'd like to reflect back to you is that thing that you have mastered, which I deeply respect and admire, because I know what it takes to master anything. Part of what mastering is also knowing that there is room for growth, but it's almost infinitesimal and very hard for others or even yourself to see once you've reached a certain point. But one of the ways to create more movement in something that you're a teacher in is to become a student in something else. And so that frustration that you have in this other area of creativity is not only allowing you to learn more about that area that you have friction with, but it's also creating more space for growth in the area that you've mastered. Because when you have that frustration, you also have that friction, and then you have that fire, and you learn new tools of expression, and then you bring those tools back to the thing that you're most comfortable with, and you can find kind of new, very small ways to express yourself there that can be incremental and accumulative.
That is some white beard shit right there.
Well, I use Just for Men, so you know.
No, that is absolutely profound. And you know, on reflection, I think I know that to be true. I think it's very insightful, and I don't have to step far out of it to be able to agree with it. It's just so easy to incrementally, our progress is incremental, it's so easy to incrementally forget that you're making progress when you're, you know, smashing your head against the wall, doing the thing that you are a neophyte at. Enough about my psychological struggles. Can we go back to yours?
Well, I think we have similar struggles as artists, as humans. One thing I will say is that my poetry, because I'm the first person in my audience, is oftentimes a reminder to myself of the lessons that I've learned and have to relearn over and over again. And when I share them with other people, I'm also sharing them again with myself.
It is, God, I hate to just, you know, make continual yes references to what you say, but I just can't. I feel like I'm on the train here, so we're gonna keep going down the tracks. But I realized, and a breakthrough in the thing that I'm working on right now was realizing that it's not about not screwing up. It's not about, you know, not falling down. It's not about, it's just about getting up 1% faster than you got up last time.
Right.
And it's not about avoiding mistakes. It's about recovering quickly and becoming, this is something that's just that this is, I think, pure creative process when you're in this journey that you're, you know, you have gone through to create this beautiful work. It's not about avoiding mistakes. It's about learning to trust yourself 1% better every day. Hmm. That is a hard path. I think that's why people don't, it's not work for the faint of heart. You know, it's real. That makes me want to ask, doing this in a studio is one thing, and doing this, you know, at the Ace Hotel and having that go out on, was it Prime? I think it's on Prime Video.
Yeah, it's
right?
Amazon
you're,
Prime.
Yeah, yeah, you're special. How did that go? I mean, clearly it went very well because it's an amazing show. But again, the difference between studio, and you performed a lot, right? You're a performer. And how was that? How was that process doing it in front of what would, you know, ultimately become tens of millions of people?
Yeah, it was an incredible experience.
I love the theater, by the way. I've recorded lots of episodes there. I know the founder of the Ace, he's passed away, but a dear friend, Alex Calderwood, very special place that you chose for that. Tell us about the process there.
It looks and feels like a cathedral. It's like a church for art. And you can feel the history and the experiences that have happened in that room. And so it's exciting to energetically add to that. So we just did a show at the Ace and we sold it out. It was a 1600 seats and it was incredible. Chris Martin was there and a lot of artists that I really respect. Aloe Black came and the energy in the room was so special. It did feel like a sacred evening. And whenever I get a chance to perform for people, there's a communion, not to continue to like go back to religious references because I'm actually not religious, but when I'm performing for people, I feel like we're having an experience together. It's not only that they're observing something. I think they're a part of something. And I'm grateful for anybody that gives me their time and their attention. And I feel like it's a great responsibility to, I don't know, like give them all of these poems. I just want to make sure that they leave feeling more grateful to be alive and more open to themselves and the world.
The album, again, is called the Never Ending Now album. In what way will this be packaged? Because you have a journal as well. I mentioned the journal earlier in our conversation. Do you, you know, so A, what's the, you know, how do we connect the album and the journal? What's the ultimate package there? Do we need to go to two places? And, you know, I guess we'll start there so I don't give you too many questions because these are, you know, these are not easy answers, but like what's mechanically, what's the way that you direct people to get, you know, both of these things?
Yeah. So for the album, it's pretty easy because by the time anybody's listening to this, it'll be on Spotify and it'll be on Apple Music and it'll be available on YouTube. So lots of avenues for people to find the album. And the journal will be available on my website, on Passion Planner's website, who I collaborated to bring this piece of art into the world. Here's another version of it that we're putting out. And it's going to be, yeah, hopefully a way for people to be inspired by the album and then move into a creative experience so that they can further whatever, I guess, inspiration comes from the album or whatever. Like, I part of what I obviously do is travel around doing these poetry workshops, and I just wanted to find a way for people to take that experience and build on it without me being there. And so the journal has all of the poems and all of these different kind of like prompts that hopefully will spark creativity. And one thing that I would say is what we were discussing earlier about whatever your main genre of art is or whatever your career is, I don't think that that should confine your creative play. I think you should go outside of your genre, because the more that you do and the more that you're willing to explore who you are in these different genres, the more tools you will have for communicating your main one and the more clarity you will have for your life. So yeah, I'm very excited about the Never Ending Now Poetry Journal. It's almost like meant to be the poetic modern artist's way.
Ooh, oh man, that is a very astute connection there. Julia Cameron's been a guest in the show a couple of times. Artist's Way has been one of the most transformative books for creators for the last, you know, the last 50 years. I see immediately, get the clarity, and I'm a massive, for what it's worth, I'm a massive plus one on the point that you made about like sort of mixing genres, exploring. And as you say in the journal, there's a lot of questions and prompts, and we've talked here, the curiosity, right? You're sort of approaching this with a curiousness that has, I think this is a really consistent theme of the show, is this expanding into other genres, learning and dragging that back into, you know, both for the benefit of your primary genre, and just, it just makes you smarter, gives you, I think the word you used was tools, gives you more and better tools. Huge plus one on that, massive endorsement there.
Can I say something else off of that?
Please do.
It's also like, we're releasing this for Mental Health Month because in a time that is so connected, we are also so disconnected, and there is a mental health epidemic.
Oh yeah.
And I see how poetry is medicine for people, and I want them to use this in a similar way that they would use any other modality for moving energy, you know? So whether it's breath work or meditation or yoga or, you know, hiking or therapy. And so, yeah, this is like, it's an invitation to have another modality to explore and play with.
Thank you for the invitation. And I would advise anyone listening to accept that invitation. I'm so tempted to like start asking some of these questions that you've asked in the journal here, but I will save that, because it's that will hopefully inspire some of y'all to pick up the journal. If we go back to the album, many times deciding who our co-conspirators and collaborators are is, you know, very challenging and you know, difficult process. And yet you somehow, it seems the way you described it and how it sounds in the album, it sounds like, you know, your collaboration with Isabella,
yeah,
it's almost like it was planned by the universe. It seems so natural, and yet this was just someone who reached out. So where was your intuition around that? Or was that just another expression or another experience of what we've been talking about, pulling on this curiosity? It's like, oh, I haven't done that, and that would be an interesting thing to record to. Or is this just trusting the universe, trusting your gut? It seems, and it appears effortless, and yet I'm sure there's some more story behind it. Or is there not? Was it just that natural?
I mean, to be honest, they just wouldn't take no for an answer. I kept trying to say, no, I'm too busy. And they were so just positively insistent. And so then I kept kind of, as you said, pulling that string. And all of a sudden it was like, oh, there's an elephant attached to it. To be honest, it was such a raw experience that when I went to master the album, I paid a guy who's like an excellent world-class mixer and master. And he sent it back to me and it was too good. It was so good that it made the album worse.
Oh.
And what I realized is, like, the better that you make this sound, the farther away it gets from you feeling like you're just kind of like sitting in the back of a car with us, you know, or like, you know, peeking through a peephole or something like that. So I said, hey, man, I sent it back to him. I said, is there any way that you could make this less good? And he said, yeah, I'll try. I said, what is the least amount of mastering you could do that would still make it passable, but not take away from the raw feeling of it? And so that's what we wound up landing on.
God, I can't not pick up the earlier thread of when you were performing just now. I felt like I was in the backseat of the car or looking through people or sitting in the corner while you were actually making this album. And then there's this like jolt of like, oh shit, this is not mediated. I guess it's mediated because I'm, you know, we're recording, you're in Los Angeles and I'm in Seattle, but it's just a very, you know, profound way to experience something. I remember in a philosophy of art class that, you know, a painting of a flower is not the flower, it's a representation of a flower. And a recording of music is not actually the experience of music. Truly experiencing music is there. And yet, this somehow has this transcendent component to it. Maybe it's the combination of the piano, or maybe it's that spoken word albums are rare but powerful. Like, A, are you going to take this on the road? Just, you know, what are your thoughts on that? Maybe it's a very powerful piece of art. Do you seek to perform it live as a part of the release of this, or will you let the art as you've made it and then made it less good through mastering, you know, be out in the world? I'm just fascinated by, you know, how many different experiences this one piece of art can have.
Thanks, man. I really appreciate you saying all that. And I'm really grateful that it landed with you in that way. I want to let it live, and I want to let it continue to show up in surprising ways, even to me. We did a listening party the other day. I'd never done this offering before, where we just, as an experiment, had 17 people, none of which really, maybe same from one or two people there, had ever heard my work. And we like lied everybody down on yoga mats and they put on eye masks and they listened to the full album together and then sat up and we had a sharing circle. And then we went into a poetry workshop where everyone got a chance to explore some of their own reflections and also some of their own stories through poetry, and then got up and were celebrated for them. You know, it's a very, very beautiful process to facilitate and to participate in. So I want to find more ways to do listening parties around the country. I want to obviously tour it through performance. As a solo artist, I want to tour it with Isabella at a certain point. There's an opportunity now for the first time ever in the last 2 years to have a Grammy category for spoken word.
Ooh.
So,
that's happening.
Yeah, we'll be working towards a campaign around that as well.
That's happening. I don't know. I know you're going to do some press about this thing. I like to think that we're one of the first. I know you've done a couple of things. I'm calling it. I'm going to be bold. I'm calling it. It's happening.
Thank you, man.
Is there anything left that you feel like left unsaid to people who'd be listening here? I will say it again. Like, this is, you know, this is something that you, it, again, as you mentioned, it will be available at all those different places, right? The Never Ending Now album will be on Apple, you know, iTunes, Spotify. You mentioned YouTube as well. It runs at 40 minutes. And like, is there anything else besides just going and getting that? And we've already talked about the journal as well that you want people to participate in. Like, of course, you mentioned touring it. So I presume that you'll share all the different locations where you're going to bring this to life and workshops and performances with Isabella or without, you know, where else would you direct our attention?
Yeah. I mean, obviously if you want to follow me on social media, you know, it's at NQ Life, and I'm sure that we'll pass all that information along to you and the listeners.
Sure.
And you can go to my website if you want at ion-q.com. So those are simple ways to sign up on the newsletter and make sure that you're up to date on all of the things that I'm creating and whether or not I'll be in your city. But also, like, if you've had any experience with the album or the journal, I really would love to hear about it. It's one of my favorite things to read other people's poetry that they've created, especially if it's in connection to a workshop that I've held or a piece of art that I've done. And so, yeah, just feel free to reach out and contact me. And I'm happy to do another poem if that kind of like helps close us out in a good way.
That would be incredible. Bookends. It would be amazing if you would send us off into the ether with one last poem. And again, before we do, because I don't want to be using up space after you complete that, we'll just end the show there. Stay on the line so we can you and I can close up. But yeah, for the listeners, we'll just let these words be the last ones, except your poem rather be the last words. But I have to, in advance of you beginning, say thank you so much for being willing to perform on the show. It's very powerful. You're always welcome here. Your art is profound and impactful, and that show at the Ace will go down as epic, and I cannot wait to see where this goes. So thank you so much for being with us today, bud.
Thank you, Chase. I love talking to you, man. I love to just bounce ideas, and your mind works in an incredibly unique way. And so I'm a fan as well. And to everybody that's listening to this, just sending you peace and poetry. I don't need to know you to be proud of you. I'm proud of you for all you've done and all you do, because you're trying to become a better version of you, and I'm fucking proud of you. I hope this poem will empower you. I hope that you'll remember it the next time someone's doubting you. I hope that you'll remember it the next time them is you, and you're doubting yourself because you have nothing else to do. Pull the voice inside aside. You're on their side. Look them in the eyes and say, who are you to talk to you that way? You wouldn't let another person talk to you that way. So what makes you think just because it's you, it's okay? You'd probably never talk to another person that way. You'd either walk away or defend yourself if you stayed. But since you're the other person in this particular case, and you can't leave yourself, you have to learn to hold space. So say, I'm proud of you. Even if it feels like it's pretend. Try talking to yourself like you're your own best friend. Try talking to yourself like the relationship could end, and the words you choose have consequence. Don't take yourself for granted just because you're always there. Celebrate yourself for always being there, always being here. Compliment the mirror. Let's be clear. Self-help is self-care. Are you aware that your awareness and your ego are completely different things? Are you scared of the dichotomy constructing everything? Are you prepared to share the inner space without defining things? Are you attached to the illusion and the lullaby it sings? Are you distracted by the story even if it isn't true? Because if you are, you're not alone. It happens to me too. And still, I'm proud to be proud of you. Woo! Yeah, you. The infinite you, the non-specific you, the specifically terrific you, the universal you, the perfectly imperfect you. Look at you, you eternal you. You raced against at least 100 million sperm before becoming you and you and you, the one and only life we'll make. We have some nerve to walk around like we're some sort of mistake. You deserve to walk around like you're designed to take up space, like you're aligned from the core inside the earth to outer space. We are all miracles without a molecule to waste. You're a physical expression of fate, and I relate. You're a mystical expression of fate, and I relate. You're a musical, magical, beautiful, powerful individual. That's why I'm extra proud of you, even when you get cynical. Remember that when times are tough. Close your eyes and hear my voice. You're a million times enough. Close your eyes and hear your voice until it's something you can trust. You're a million times enough. You're a million times enough. You're a million times enough. You're a million times. You are the sum of all of your experiences. You are the sum of none of your experiences. You're only you because they doubted you. You're alive. And I'm proud.
All right. Hey, before you go, thanks so much for listening. And if you got value from this show, chances are your community will too, right? In the particular lies the universal. Please share this link to the show with a friend or mention the show on social. That is a huge benefit for us and hopefully in exchange for providing value to you. I want you to know that I really appreciate your time, the attention, anything that you give to the show, and the questions that you ask our guests, either on social media or through my text community. All that is pure gold. This community, like any community, is a testament to that old phrase, a rising tide floats all boats. And by elevating one another, by sharing and resharing this show, the tidbits that you learn and the experiences you take away, all of that has a collective, massive, positive impact on the world. So, just a quick thank you. I appreciate all the effort you put into sharing the show. All right, that's a wrap. Let's put today's episode into practice and get back to growing together.